Welcome to the Philomane Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:52 British Summer Time. Today is September 2nd. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And it has been really quite eventful, and particularly in the last day of the week. So, most markets had this big decline in early August. Most found support on the 8th and 9th, some somewhat later, around the 22nd or 23rd. Markets have rallied to varying degrees. Today was or this week was relatively positive for the majority of markets. There was a large number of Asian markets were closed because of the Eid holiday at the end of Ramadan. But majority of markets were relatively steady until yesterday when Wall Street was down by about 1%, and they were all considerably weaker in here today. The Brazilian market rallied really quite impressively yesterday. It was up over 3% on the back of a rate cut, and it gave up a good part of that advance in here today. It was down 2.6%. In Asia, the majority of markets were weaker in here today. The Nikkei was down by 1.2%, the Hang Seng by 1.8%, the ASX in Australia down 1.5%. The majority of markets in Europe were down by in excess of 3%. The FTSE was down by 2.3%. In the Americas, the Dow Jones is closing out the day down 2%. At one point this week, the Dow had moved back into positive territory for the year, but it is certainly not closing out the week in positive territory for the year. The Nasdaq, which has been one of the best performers in absolute terms over the last 2.5 years, has had a comparatively shallow reaction compared to some of the really extreme declines that we've seen in other markets. It had rallied really quite impressively back from its early August lows back up just into the overhead trading range, but it's fallen back out of it again. This we've characterized the trading action that has been evident for more than a month as bear market activity. People classify a bear market as when an index falls by 20%. The S&P is not quite there, but the when we take a step back and look at what we see in the markets, we see a large number of completed Type 3 top formations. And from our perspective, the size of the declines that have already occurred have damaged investor confidence. It's going to take time at a minimum to renew that confidence. This was also an interesting week in the government bond markets. US Treasuries went down and had a look at the 135 area yesterday. They bounced emphatically from that area and they were stronger today by a full 3 points. They're back above the 140 area right now. When one flips that around and looks at it on a yield basis, the current area in yields was where the yield found support around this time last year on the announcement of quantitative easing, the second round of quantitative easing. The yield really would need to post a large upward dynamic, break the progression of lower rally highs to really indicate that supply is getting the upper hand here. And on the price chart, it needs to sustain a move below 135. And today's upward dynamic is another emphatic suggestion that demand is certainly a tailwind for the sovereign bond markets at present. In the commodity complex, oil has been too strong for too long. And I characterize that as Brent crude above $100 for longer than it was above $100 in 2008. High oil prices are a tax on consumption. A surge in oil prices has been a harbinger of recessions for the last number of decades, and oil prices above $100 are an uncomfortable headwind for the majority of economies out there. There was a number of data points were released today. The first was the stagnating job situation in the USA. Following that announcement, the majority of markets fell rather precipitously. In the Eurozone, there has been tepid demand for Italian bonds at auctions this week, and that's in response to the failure of Berlusconi's government to push through the austerity measures that were announced in the last month. In addition, the Greek government bond yields are hitting new highs. Spread over bunds, they're close to 1600 basis points. And that's in response to the Greek politicians not playing ball with the IMF, and negotiations on the second tranche of bailouts have been suspended until February 14th. They had anticipated getting the whole thing wrapped up by September 5th. So we're seeing that some of the most heavily indebted countries are proving reluctant to adopt the austerity that's being demanded of them by the bailout troika. That type of uncertainty is weighing on stock markets. It's helping to drive demand for the sovereign bonds of highly rated countries such as Germany, such as the UK, and such as the USA. The USA might not be triple A rated anymore, but it still has control of its own currency. It's still the US dollar is still the reserve currency, and there is no question that the USA is not going to honor its obligations, but probably by simply printing currency. So when people look at the situation, it has created a great deal of uncertainty in stock markets. The fact that governments are capable of printing currency and are printing bonds as if it was going out of fashion is also not particularly convincing for a large segment of investors, and they're going for an asset that you can't simply print into existence, and that's gold. Now, gold accelerated to a high of $1,913.50 about 3 weeks ago. It then pulled back by $200, rallied emphatically, ranged in the region of $1,800, and broke upwards again in here today. It's currently at $1,880. That's up almost $54 on the day. It's within $35 of the all-time high. Gold is still really quite overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. However, such has been the amount of uncertainty that continues to stalk various different asset classes that gold is currently being viewed as the ultimate safe haven. And that is helping to support prices up here. A clear downward dynamic at this stage would be required to indicate anything other than temporary support in the region of the high. There still remains the distinct possibility that gold is going to move into a range in consolidation and allow that 200-day or the overextension relative to the EMA to close. But that would be subject to other asset classes calming down and volatility decreasing. And that isn't the most likely scenario based on the type of chart action that we're getting right now. So, gold could move on to additional new highs, and September is a seasonally bullish period for gold over the last decade and more. Silver today was also stronger by $1.78, and both. And platinum, which has held in the region of the $800 level for a while now, was weaker by $8. Platinum was stronger by $34. It's almost up to $1,900 now. Platinum has been a wallflower among the precious metals, and it's been largely range bound for quite some time. It went right up to the upper side of its range, encountered short-term resistance, pulled back, found support in the region of $1,800, and now is improving once more. It's probably, along with silver, it's the leading contender to rally in conjunction with gold and potentially be a high beta play on gold. Today was also noteworthy in that the MX Gold Bugs Index broke upwards in here. Now, that's been ranging above the previous peak for the last year, and gold shares have underperformed for most of the time when gold has been moving on to hit new highs, particularly over the last 6 and 7 months. But they appear to be in the process of catching up. The higher price of gold is beginning to filter down into the balance sheets of various gold miners, and the earnings are starting to become visible, and that is helping to drive investor demand for gold mines. And I reviewed a number of those in Comment of the Day yesterday. We're seeing that an increasing number of them have broken progressions of lower rally highs and are breaking upwards to new high ground, and that's really quite bullish chart action generally. In the currency markets, the dollar index was a bit stronger in here today. To the best of my knowledge, on a weekly basis, it's formed an upside key reversal, so that's certainly in its favor. The dollar is a classic safe haven type asset and could attract investor interest in the current environment. The Japanese yen has fallen, sorry, has risen back up to close to 76 yen against the US dollar. 76 yen has represented a period where a region where the Bank of Japan has intervened to weaken the yen on two occasions this year. If we were to see the yen appreciate past 76, the chances of an additional intervention by the BOJ would increase quite considerably, I suspect. The other central bank that has been active in trying to weaken its currency was the Swiss franc. And this week, the Swiss franc rallied for the last 3 consecutive days in a dynamic fashion. It formed a weekly key reversal for the euro, and this is going to test the resolve of the SNB. Are they going to commit additional funds and try to buy their way to a weaker Swiss franc, or are they going to allow the market to dictate where the currency is going to go? The chart action is such that it's going to require a significant downward dynamic for the Swiss franc to suggest that it's not going to strengthen further in this current environment. It unwound much of the overbought condition relative to the euro. It went right back up to test the progression of lower rally highs. It really does need to break that progression of lower rally highs, which has been intact now for nearly 4 years, to suggest that the euro is back in the driver's seat, or that the euro demand is back in terms of dominance. And it hasn't done that yet. Elsewhere this week, the grain and bean complex was very strong. The corn market went right up and tested the, I think, 780 and change cent level, and the previous peak is in the region of $8. It pulled back slightly yesterday. It recouped the majority of the decline in here today. Soybeans, a very similar type of performance, although soybeans isn't nearly as overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. Soybeans has been ranging with a very mild downward bias for the last 6 or 7 months, and it broke that progression last week. It moved to a new high for the year this week. This is bullish action. This looks like the consolidation that's been going on for the last 6 or 7 months is about to be completed. Rough Rice completed a 2-year base in July and hit new highs for the year as well in here this week. So food price inflation is likely to remain a concern for the short and potentially medium term. The chart action that we're seeing, particularly in soybeans and in rough rice would suggest that higher prices are more likely than not in the short to medium term. Industrial metals were all reasonably weak in here today, and most of those had rallied rather well from the lower side of their ranges from their lows that they posted last week. When we take a step back and we look at the varying performance of asset classes that we've seen over the last month, veteran subscribers will be familiar with our preference for high growth Asian economies. We don't refer to markets as emerging and developed anymore. For the last couple of years, we've referred to them as progressing and regressing markets. It's not difficult to understand why we refer to markets such as the USA, most of Europe, as regressing, and Japan as regressing markets. The debt problems that are there, the political paralysis with which to deal with them, the enormous deficits, and generally low growth environments are not attractive from the perspective of a long-term investor. On the other hand, progressing economies generally tend to have surpluses, relatively firm currencies, dynamic growth economies, and over the last decade they've fostered their middle classes, so they have succeeded in raising hundreds of millions of people out of poverty and into the middle classes. And when one clicks through a large number of shares, whereas until 6 or 7 weeks ago there was a high degree of commonality between just about anything that was leveraged to the growth of the global economy, that commonality is breaking down. And the majority of shares that are leveraged to simply the industrial side of the global economy have had some of the largest pullbacks. That's in the oil sector, in the transportation sector, in the chemical sector. They've had large, we would refer to them at the chart seminar as massive reactions against the prevailing trends. We see a large number of completed Type 3 top formations. It's important in this type of situation to look at lots of long-term data. Myopia is probably the worst mistake you can make when viewing charts, and that is to concentrate on the really short-term data, particularly when you have a large degree of volatility. Markets have been moving up and down on a daily basis by in excess of 3%, some even more than that. We've seen markets, the majority of stock markets found support in March of 2009. Some of the leading markets found support considerably earlier, and they were already finding support in October of 2008. Most markets rallied relatively consistently from March 2009, and they began to lose momentum from early this year. The vast majority continue to hold above their 200-day moving averages, but the vast majority also broke those 200-day moving averages in late July and early August, and extended declines below those MAs that have damaged sentiment considerably. They've also made what were previously relatively consistent uptrends wholly inconsistent. So the progressions of higher reaction lows have been taken out. They've sustained moves below their 200-day moving averages. And even some of the best performing markets, and I've classified three different types of response among markets to the declines that we saw back in August, and I've written about that in Comment of the Day today. But when one looks at something like the Nasdaq, which is constituted by some of the world's leading technology shares, and these are companies that can create value, and You look at the Nasdaq 100, it had a comparatively shallow reaction, then it rallied right back up to above the 2200 level. It's encountered resistance in the region of the lower region of the 200-day moving average, and now it's falling away from that. Well, that's not bullish activity. If we were to turn this upside down and look at it in terms of a base, we'd be saying that potentially the market was forming a first step above the base. But this being a top, we could classify it as forming a first step below the top. These markets really do need to rally. They need to rally emphatically. They need to get back above their 200-day moving averages. They need to sustain moves above those levels, and they need to break out to new recovery highs to question the bear market hypothesis. And at the moment, that looks like a big ask. So we're seeing some of the better performing markets, like the Nasdaq, or the ones that had some of the better bounces, like Brazil or Australia or South Africa, beginning to encounter resistance at the lower side of their ranges. They could still rally, they could still push back up into those overhead ranges, but they'd really want to be starting to get about it. When we look at some of the weaker markets, those markets that did not find a low back in the 8th and 9th of August, those that didn't bottom really until the end of August, like the DAX in Germany, and there are a number of other markets like that. Now, Singapore is another example. They haven't rallied particularly impressively. The DAX in particular has barely rallied at all, and that's not convincing action. The best that can be said about the chart action on the DAX at present is that it's lost downward momentum. But that's not enough from the perspective of someone who wants to purchase in here because the chart action is deteriorating. So we are presented with a situation where the majority of markets have ranged for the last month. We're seeing that the S&P, which had probably had one of the better rallies, it had found a higher reaction low in the middle of or the late part of August, and it moved on to a higher rally high in the very short term. Now it's pulling back from that area. It does need to find support above that August 22nd low to sustain even a short-term bullish outlook. Provided it does that, then it is still a possibility that the market ranges for a while and makes its way back up towards the lower side of the overhead trading range. But such has been the depth of the decline that so many of these markets have had that they would need to push back up into those overhead trading ranges and do substantially more than that to reassert the uptrends. And at present, that is continuing to look like a big ask. I mentioned that if you do a click through of various large diversified indices, you'll see that the industrial segment, having been quite positive, has actually had one of the larger declines. And the DAX is symptomatic of that because it's got so many large, globally oriented industrial type companies. Some of the best performing companies in this stock market decline of the last 6 to 7 weeks have been those that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer. So primarily, it has been globally oriented companies that are leveraged more towards the increased spending power of the global middle class. They've probably held up best. There's only a small number of companies that have actually managed to push up and post new highs since early August. McDonald's was one of them. McDonald's is a dividend aristocrat. It has pulled back rather sharply in here today. It hit a new high on Wednesday. Sorry, I think on Tuesday, excuse me. and is unwinding some of the short-term overbought condition. But this is a company that has phenomenal earnings potential and is heavily involved in businesses that are based primarily on the growth of the consuming middle class right across Asia. And I pointed out a number of those in a review of the S&P 100 last Friday. These companies are likely to be some of the first to find support. They're unlikely to remain completely immune from additional selling pressure, if that is what we're going to get. But leading shares are generally tend to lead for a reason. And the relative strength that we're seeing, not just in the globally oriented dividend aristocrats, but also in the ASEAN region, in Indonesia and the Philippines, suggests that that is where the really bullish story is. It's in those dynamic growth economies where you have a large multiplier effect in terms of GDP growth feeding down into the lives of ordinary people. As I said, they're unlikely to remain immune from additional selling pressure, but they're without doubt worthy of monitoring because if they begin to find support, then the chances are that they are going to be reliable lead indicators for the rest of the global stock markets. The major consumer companies, particularly those that have strong cash flows, are likely to remain relative strength leaders within the confines of a bear market as it occurs. They're also likely to be among some of the first to bottom in that type of environment. But they're unlikely to remain immune from any selling pressure that occurs. Gold mines are doing spectacularly well at present. They have in the past been heavily influenced by the stock market, and they appear to have stepped aside from that dependence for the short term at least. And that is at least in part because of the increasing interest in gold. We've often talked about the love and fear for gold. Every major bull market has a distinct persona, and gold is being driven by those who love it and they want to hold it and hold it physically and hold it in their hands and hold it as an investment position, and those who want to wear it and those who see it as a cachet or a way to display their wealth. And it's also being loved for its physical attributes, the fact that it is immutable, that it can't simply be printed into existence, that it is seen as the only real money. And that's helping. There's a certain romance to the idea of a major bull market in gold, that it's the only thing that one can really depend on in a highly uncertain world. And that kind of thinking is helping to drive this bull market. And the fact that gold has pushed up and rallied so emphatically from the $1,700 level is really quite impressive. This is a secular bull market, and gold has returned a positive return for each of the last 10 years, and 2011 is likely to be no different. When at the chart seminar, we characterize major markets into three psychological perception stages. And the first stage is disbelief. People don't believe it. And for gold, veterans will remember a time when there was a large group of investors didn't want to know about gold. They said they've heard it all before and they're not interested. I remember doing radio interviews and mentioning that gold was a good long-term investment, and the response from the interviewer being, "Well, I've heard all that before. I don't want to talk about gold, and neither do any of my listeners." So that's disbelief. And the second one is acceptance. When gold has been going up every year for 7 or 8 years, it's pretty hard to deny the fact that something is really happening. And when one looks at the Dow Gold Ratio, stocks have had three massive secular bull markets in the last 100 years, and they peaked in 1929, 1965, and 1999. Subsequent secular bull markets for gold bottomed in. They generally take a long time to bottom in terms of the ratio. So gold can outperform shares for a considerable period. It's already been, well, 1999 to now is almost 12 years. The ratio is currently at 6.3. Previous lows were in the region of 2, and the one in 1980 was closer to, it was less than 2. So, with gold today at $1,900, or as close as makes no difference, and the Dow Jones at 11,000, people will be doing the math and thinking that gold could really go a long way up from here. And that is a possibility. We have opined for almost the last decade that the major secular bull market in gold would eventually end in gold fever. That the major bull market probably wouldn't be choked off until we had significantly higher interest rates. Well, we certainly don't have significantly higher interest rates at present. With the Fed beginning to talk about an additional round of quantitative easing, then that is going to be only a tailwind for an asset that doesn't have a yield, such as gold. But as prices continue to go up and the romance of the major bull market in gold will become increasingly infectious, and that is something that we need to be aware of, because every major bull market ends in disappointment for the majority of investors. We need to continue to apprise ourselves of the chart facts, not of the chart theories, not of our wishes, not of our demands, but of what's actually happening, and cater our investment or trading strategies and position size according to the price action that the market presents. Provided that we do that, we're likely to come through this bull market in much better shape. And there is no doubt about it, this is a major bull market, and we apparently are in, if we're not in the latter stage, which is getting into that gold fever stage, we're probably in the beginnings of that latter stage. And I say that because the consistency of gold's advance has become increasingly consistent over the last 2 years. The consistency of the last 2 years is quite different from what we saw for the preceding almost 8 years. That's indicative of increasing demand and increasing demand relative to supply. When demand becomes increasingly dominant, it tends to suck in an increasing number of people, an increasing number of investors, an increasing amount of capital from all over the world. That's exactly what we're seeing with gold right now. Gold is appreciating in just about every currency. So that would suggest that we are entering the third psychological perception stage of this major bull market. And there is a strong likelihood that it will eventually end in a massive gold fever. most people are going to be asking, when's that going to happen? And the answer is, it's impossible to know. Right now, gold is really quite overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. That overextension has contracted somewhat in the last couple of weeks by virtue of gold mostly going sideways. But it's a risky trade at $35 below the previous peak. That doesn't mean it's going to collapse from here. It would really require a very large downward dynamic to suggest anything other than temporary resistance in the region of the peak. But it would have been a better buy at $1,700 than $1,900. And if one were buying today, one would really need to be tailoring the size of the position to the risk that's out there in the market. Nothing has happened from the perspective of an unleveraged long-term investor to close out a position in gold. There has been no major trend-ending activity. What we've had is an overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. It was a type 1 advance in terms of the acceleration. We've had an unwind of at least part of that acceleration. The most likely scenario remains that gold spends some time and consolidates. That would be by far the healthiest of the potential outcomes. Gold could still advance even further and make an even wider overextension relative to the MA. That would certainly keep a lot of the bulls very interested, but it would just increase the potential for an eventual reversion to the mean. If there's a simple law of physics in markets, is that markets that become overextended relative to a trend mean will eventually revert to that mean. At present, there's not a great deal of evidence that that's occurring in gold, but we have to accept the fact that it is a realistic possibility. So gold is by far the best of the best performing asset class out there, and gold shares appear to be in catch-up mode at present. The stock market environment is not particularly encouraging. We could still see that the S&P finds support and posts another higher reaction low and continues to range. That would certainly be a favorable outcome. But the fact that US treasuries are so very strong and that gold is attracting such an enormous amount of interest that a number of European countries are deciding that they would rather combat the austerity measures that are being forced upon them, none of that is particularly encouraging. And oil prices have been too high for too long. The European, UK, and US and Japanese banking sectors are in trouble. And growth has been slowing. So, this isn't a particularly bullish environment for stock markets generally, and safe havens are certainly continuing to attract a great deal of interest. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.